late on my program. There is another week next week. I was supposed to give three talks next week rather than four. I was not planning to be in Toronto Friday, but it happens that I will be here, so we could have a full 4 days course next week if it's okay with you. We could also have a bit more than 1 hour. Let's say an hour 15 or something. I don't want to take. I don't. You may be very busy. Have a lot of things to do. It's just because we are sort of a bit late on the things that I wanted to cover, and certainly I will not be able to cover everything I wanted to cover. But at least you will have a better idea of what the theory of quasi categories. If I could take more time next week. I'm sorry? So, should we have a 1 hour and a half next week? Well, anyway, officially it was supposed to be 1 hour. We could have 1 hour and a half, and, well, if you don't have the time, well, then... today? Starting... yeah, that would be, if we have 1 hour and a half, that would be from 9:30 to 11. Just because my evaluation of the time it takes to go through these notes was not very good. Well, in general, I have a problem of evaluating how much time is needed to do certain things. I'm sorry?
I prefer to take enough time to spend a bit longer.
You agree with having 1:30?
Yeah,
but what about having one more day of Friday next week? Aha. Okay. Well, we shall see. Let's take half an hour more next week, and maybe that would be enough. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So. We have considered the homotopy category of the contravariant model structure over a simplicized set P. So we have S over B, the category of simplicized sets over B, and we have the class of contravariant equivalences in there, and this form a model category called the contravariant model structure, and the homotopy category of that was denoted omega B. So I should say that this is the homotopy category of three stacks. Over B. Because there is essentially the idea is that right fibration over B, a pre-stack, that's the idea here. There are many notions of pre-stack, but that's one of them, and if you have some other notion, it should be equivalent to this one. I should tell you a few more things about these pre-stacks or right fibration. The fiber of right fibration are CAM complexes. There are many proofs of that. I will not try to prove it here, but what happened is that if you want to compute the fiber of a right fibration, fiber over, you're taking a pullback, and a pullback of a right fibration is a right fibration. You have the small general result that a right fibration, if K is a CAM complex, then a right fibration from X to K is a CAM fibration. That's a theorem. That can be proved that if the codomain is a CAM complex, then the notions of right fibrations or CAM fibration coincide. Now, if you use this and put back a right fibration, you have a right fibration over 1, which is a CAM complex. So this is a CAM fibration. Well, if this is a CAM fibration, this implies that this is a CAM complex. So that's one way of proving this result or understanding it. It follows from this thing. Okay. Another thing also about these sort of mysterious, so you have R of B in S over B, the full subcategory of span by the right fibration This is the category. Objects. For the controlling of model structure. E over B, W, C, and yes. E over B. Yes. Ah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Now a map. U from X to Y is a contravariant equivalence if and only if it is a Faber-wise homotopy equivalence. If and only if the map UB between the Faber is a weak homotopy equivalence for every B. Maybe to explain better what this means, I recall that the Faber-wise homotopy equivalence meant weak Faber-wise homotopy equivalence that the map is invertible in S over B pi 0. Well, that means that really a map over B would be a Faber-wise homotopy equivalence if it's really there exists a map the other way together with homotopy on both sides. So you will have an homotopy from VU to the identity of M and an homotopy from UV to the identity of M. And by homotopy here, I mean a Faber-wise homotopy. Okay? So it's a mandapi which respect the structure maps here, P and Q, let's say. Okay, so it's a global thing. Right? You need to have a Fabergé mandapi. That's the notion which is here. But this is equivalent to that. I mean, here it's an onomatopoeia fiber by fiber. Okay? Okay? So this could be called a pointwise onomatopoeia. This condition here is very much like the condition when you declare that a map between two diagrams is an equivalence, if and only if it is pointwise equivalence, right? So this is very much the same, right? So for Fabergé objects, all these different ways of looking at what an equivalence of stack or pre-stack is the same. So this is good to know. This is, I would say, what you would expect, but it's good to that it really works like this. It's true. It works like this. Okay. Yeah, I said something. Yeah. Now, I think it's time to discuss a little bit about initial and terminal vertices. Yeah. Okay. I forgot to say that. Yeah, thank you. Right. For XY in R of B. Right. Maybe I should draw a little diagram about what these things look like, because I have some picture in mind, and my intuition is partly based on these pictures, and I think it's good if I try to give you what's the picture. So you have B, that's the same as I said B. You may think it as a space where there are paths, but the paths are have a direction. And if you have a path from A to B, you do not necessarily have a path from B to A. It's sort of directed homotopy theory. And of course, another object over will be a space like this. So if I say that A U is an S over B, you just have a space mapping to B. But there is a big difference between the general space mapping to B and the Fabergé one, the pre-stack. So I'm going to try to describe what the picture of a pre-stack. The picture of a pre-stack would be more like a bundle. Well, not exactly, but so if X is a pre-stack, it would be sort of more uniform in the following sense. That each time you have an arrow like this in the base, you look at the fiber XB. Let's see, the fiber over B, you have the fiber over A. Then there is a almost like a map from from B to A. Well, the map is actually realized by arrows in this direction, in the sense that for every arrow here, you can lift up this arrow, right, and produce an arrow like this. And the lifted arrow is unique up to MOTP. You may have different lifting, but the collections of lifted arrow is contractible. So you may think that, if you like, that there is a map. In fact, we can discuss this. The map is not there, but you can produce one if you like. That is going to realize this picture. I'm sorry? The arrows?
Yes.
No. It's a situation which it's very much like a Grothic fabrication, but where every arrow is Cartesian. So, if you have a Grothic fabrication where the fibers are groupoids, then every arrow is Cartesian and conversely. Okay? Here it's a situation where the fibers are CAN complexes, which is some kind of generalized groupoid. So this should be is sort of the analog of what a pre-stack or a Rife fabrication is. So let me just exhibit a map from XB to A, which is going to first. S over B is enriched over S. In other words, there is a HOM simply set from X to Y. So it makes sense to talk about the simply set of maps between two objects over B. So let me just describe what is a simplex. This is for XY in S over B. So a simplex should be the same thing as a map from delta N cross X to Y, a map in S over B. Well, this is an object of S over B because X, because of the projection, it goes to X and then it goes to B. And this is also Y is over B. So the delta N cross X is an object over B and Y too, and it makes sense to consider a map. And now such a map is a simplex here. Okay, so there is a simplicized set of maps. And a point in B is actually a map with value in B. I mean, a point B in B is a map hence also an object of S over B. Therefore, it makes sense to consider the synthesized set of maps from a point to X. So you have X an object over B. For X in S over B, you can consider the simplicized set of maps from the point to X. And of course, this is the fiber. You can check This is just a fiber. Okay. So that's another way of looking at the fiber. Okay, it's really humming from a point. Now, suppose that you have an arrow F from A to B, arrow in B. This can be also viewed as a map F from I to B. Thus, F is an object of S over B. Right? And you can hum this object into X, right? So it makes sense to consider Fx, right? This is in the picture. You have B, you have X, and the arrow F from A to B, and you looking at all the simplest set of sections of X over this little arrow. So this is the simplest set of arrows over B, right? All possible arrows. It is the simplest set of arrows over B. It's a kind of extensions of the idea of a fiber. The idea of a fiber is sort of the same, but it's over a point. Now you're looking at a sort of fatter, longer fiber. Okay? Okay. Now, this has two projections. One to A and one to B. Because each time you have an arrow here, it has a domain and a codomain, and they will have two projections. Right? It comes, in fact, from these two projections come from the inclusion. You have I, you have F, B, and here I have 0. And this is A. And here I have 1, and this is B. Therefore, I have two arrows. One, let's say, from the point A, I have the arrow 0 to F, and I have another arrow B called 1. So this is a diagram in S over B. Okay? And if you hum this diagram with X, you get, because of the contravariant nature of, you get this thing. Yeah. Here, yes, thank you. Right. Yeah. But intuitively, this picture is clear. You have the simplest set of sections of X over the arrows, and each section has a domain and a codomain, and you have projections into the fiber over A and the fiber over B. Okay? Now, this thing here is a trivial vibration. So I'm going to discuss that, but that's the point here, is that this being a trivial vibration, it always has a section. So you can always, if you like, pick a section of the trivial vibration, and the corresponding map is what you may call F star, from the fiber over B to the fiber over A. I'm sorry? Yeah. If X is fibrant, you can define this pullback map. For a general A, it's not, okay? You have to assume that X is the right vibration. Right. Okay. But why is this a trivial vibration? Because, in other words, in this diagram, this map here is really like an equivalence. Well, it is an homotopy equivalence. It's because one explanation for that is that you could say it's because this is a simplicial model category. Right, there is a notion of simplicial model category. So that's one ingredient. And two, the inclusion here, the map, from B to F, the inclusions of the target in the arrow is an acyclic cofibration. Because that's true in any simplicial model category. If you have a fibrant object, and if you map an acyclic cofibration like this, you must get a trivial vibration, right? So it's really based on the fact that this is an acyclic cofibration. But now, why is that an acyclic cofibration? It's because the right anodyne maps are contravariant equivalents. So it means that if you have the inclusion of a horn and with the conditions like this, then these maps form contravariant equivalents. They are weak equivalences for the contravariant model structure. And in particular, well, this is a map in S, right? In B, I just mean that the underlying map. In other words, if you take a simplex in B, any simplex, take a horn, you get a triangle just by composing, okay? And this inclusion is a contravariant equivalence. In particular, if n is 1, and k equal 1, you get exactly this inclusion right here. Because this is really F, B, and that's 1, and that's B, right? Here is the the map, your own intrusion. Okay? Okay, one more thing. So that give you a flavor of what are the pre-stacks. This pullback map here, F upper star, is not unique because it depends on the choice of a section. But the trivial vibration, not only that it has one section, but any two sections are homotopically equivalent. The synthesized set of section of a trivial vibration is contractible. So actually this F upper star is defined up to a contractible system, right? So it's very pretty much like in a Grothendieck vibration where you have a pullback functor. It's not unique, but any two are unambiguously connected by an isomorphism. Here it's unambiguously connected by an homotopy, which is itself unique up to homotopy, etc., etc. Okay. So what's the difference between an object which is not vibrant and an object which is vibrant? Well, of course we have some understanding, but every object can be made vibrant by choosing a vibrant replacement. So if you have an object U, it can be made vibrant. This will be a contravariant equivalence, and this will be a right vibration. Now, what is this about? I mean, this may be a little bit harder to explain, but the idea, so let me just pick one case. Let me take for A just a point. The inclusions of a point A in B. So what is the right vibration generated by A? Okay. Well, from the point, things should start to propagate. So I imagine that the point is here, but if each time I have an arrow here, I should be able to lift it here, right? Okay, so every arrow which is going to be, which I could find with target, etc., will produce something upstairs. Okay, so this is A, but RA should look like that. And in fact, if B is a quasi category, RA is the quasi category B over A, is the slice. So this is actually B over A. I mean, okay, it's the right vibration generated by A. It's B over A. And with the canonical projections from B over A to A. You may think of the case where B is a category, right? So that's the case where A is a point. Well, in the general case, you have to imagine that you have A like this over B, a lot of stuff, but it's not necessarily a right vibration, but each time you have a target to A, right? An arrow here moving to A, then it's going to be liftable, and so array is some kind of things like that. R of A. It's a kind of shadow, if you like. You can imagine that these arrows are, if you put a light on the side, you have this little shape and there's a shadow. And, right. So that's the kind of picture that I have in mind. They are very simple-minded, but if you use them, they work. You can use them to figure out what should be true and what should be false. Okay. So I come here to a very important point, which is the notion of terminal and initial objects. That's A inside, and R, yeah. definition. A vertex. A in B is said to be terminal if the map B is finite. Now, I choose this very abstract definition because it's a sort of invariant definition of what a funnel vertex is. Because the class of funnel maps, which was defined quite abstractly before, is invariant under weak categorical equivalence. Right? So, if you have two funnel maps, if you have a commutative square with a weak categorical equivalence, and if this one is finite, so if and only if this one is finite, right? So that's the invariance of the notions of finite maps on the under weak categorical equivalence. We will understand better what our funnel maps in a moment, but I choose this very abstract definition because of... now, there is one thing. A monomorphism is final if and only if it is right anodyne. That's another theorem. Okay? So, this map is actually always monic. A map from a terminal object is always monic in category theory, right? Monic. So we could say if and only if is right anodyne. Let me give you other criterion for funnel maps. If B is a quasi-category, Then, a vertex. Is final if and only if every semi-solid sphere with x n equal b can be filled. So let's look a little bit at this. The usual notions of finite map in a category not a finite map of terminal vertex. I'm sorry. For a vertex, I don't say final. I say terminal, right? Terminal. It's terminal. We could say final too. That would be fine. But classically, we call about terminal vertices. And B is terminal if for every A you want, for every A there exists a unique arrow from A to B, let's say in a category. B, an object B is terminal if and only if this thing. Okay. Now, what this says, there exists a unique arrow. This data here is really a map from the boundary of I, which is consisting of two points, to B, such that x of 1 is B. Right? That's the data. The data of A and B is the same thing as a simply set sphere of dimension 0 with the property that x of 1 is B. Okay? And that's the classical condition. The classical condition is saying that any simply sized sphere like this of dimension 0 can be filled uniquely. That's the classical condition for a finite map. For a terminal vertex. So the condition there is pretty much the same, except there is no uniqueness, and the absence of uniqueness is replaced by higher filling conditions. So not only in a quasi category, for if B is a finite vertex, then for every vertex A, there will be an arrow. So, no doubt, there will be an arrow. So you have A prime, there will be an arrow. There are plenty of arrows. Now, if it happens that you have an arrow, let's say F from A to A prime, then you have a triangle, and you would like to say that this triangle commutes. Classically, this triangle has to commute because of the uniqueness of this arrow. You compose, and it's right. But here what you have is a triangle in B, X, such that the terminal vertex of the triangle is your given object B. X of 2 is B. And you ask for a filling. And therefore, you are actually saying that any triangle commutes because there exists a filling. Okay? But it does not stop there. The condition is given in every dimension. So that's the notion of terminal object in a quasi-category. I will give you another description. You can also construct B of XY, the simplest set of maps between two objects of B. This is the fiber of the map from B to D. It is fiber of the canonical map at XY. And now, if B is a quasi-category, this is if B is a quasi-category, an object B is terminal. If and only if B of XB is contractible. The simplest set of arrows from any other arrow to B is contractible. It's a Kahn complex, actually, for every X in B. So that's another way of saying that something is a terminal vertex. That's equivalent to that. Right, that's all equivalent. There is another way of saying that something is final. Well, there are many equivalent ways. But let's not to dig too much on this at the moment. But let me observe if B is a quasi-category, then for every B in B, we have a canonical factorization you take the map B and you can factor it like this. This is, let's say, the unit of B, right? I mean, you can think in terms of category theory. You have the slice category here. This category has a terminal object. So this thing has a terminal object, which is the identity of B, right? And here there is a projection. And this factorization is that the first part here of the factorization is right on a dime. That means that that the identity of B is terminal in B. Okay, that's everyone known. And the other projection P is a right vibration. So I spoke a lot about the factorization system of right anodyne maps and right vibrations, and this is a sort of canonical way of doing this factorization for a map B, for an object B. Okay, I don't have much time left. Let me be, I should say, should try to formulate Quillen theorem A. That's the in this paper on higher category theory. One, I think, Springer lecture note. Okay, there's two famous theorems, Quillen theorem A and Quillen theorem B. Okay, I'm going to interpret these two theorems. First, today, maybe I can do it with Quillen theorem A. now, fact is that right anodyne maps are stable under base change along left vibrations. That's a fact. This fact can be interpreted, reformulated later, we shall see, saying that the left vibrations, there is a notion, we introduce the notions of proper maps and of smooth maps, but the left vibrations are propers. That's proper, and the right vibrations are smooth. The notions of proper maps and of smooth map was introduced by Grothendieck for maps between categories for functors, but this can be extended to to map of simplified sets. So that's a fact, and what we have here is that it turns out that a map X in S over B is a contravariant equivalence if and only if its base change along any left vibration is a weak homotopy equivalence. So that's another way of understanding what a contravariant equivalence is. The important thing here is that you don't need X and Y to be fabrant over B for that. That Remember that a contravariant equivalence meant really faber-wise omotopy equivalence when x and y are faberant. Okay? So you look at the fibers and you check if you have an omotopy equivalence there when x and y are faberant. But if you're ready to replace the points of B by fatter points, and the fatter points are given by left fibration mapping to B, then you have a criterion to check whether a map is a contravariant equivalence by just pulling back and checking if the map is a weak homotopy equivalence. This is just an ordinary weak homotopy equivalence. And in order to do that, to check, it's not, you don't have to check that the pullback is a weak homotopy equivalence along any left fibration. You can, if you like, for each B, let us choose a factorization. Of the inclusion of the map as a left anodyne map followed by left fibration. You can do that for any Saint-Pierre set, right? It doesn't have to be a quasi category. So for each point, you choose a factorization of the of this map as a left anodyne map followed by a left fibration, and then you can do use these half points to check whether a map is so a map let's say U from X to Y in S over B is a contravariant equivalence. If and only if the map X over B L B so you pull it back over this fat point, the map is weak homotopy equivalence for every vertex B. When B is a category, you can take L of B to be B under slash B, and then the criterion becomes that you have something called B over U, and the criterion becomes that this should be weak MOTP equivalence for every vertex B. And I don't have the time to explain it, but this is an extension of Quillen theorem A. I would like to explain it intuitive content of this also, because with the little picture I gave you this morning, you can really see that this thing should be obvious. It's but I would have to work a little bit on that Monday. We start at 9:30 up to 11. If there is room, if the room is free at 11, I will check with the administration. Okay, thank you. Oh yes, right.
This is